Give a big hand for Denise. She's not nervous at all. And again, thank you for coming.
Use this.
You can use this, you can use this. I mean, it's a bit of a pain to carry it around, but...
Okay. Hello. I'm pretty nervous, so please bear with me. This is my first ever public speaking. Okay, let's get started. Enabled by Design meets Scripting Enabled. I think this very sort of simple equation quite nicely sums up what Scripting Enabled's about. And that's technology plus good design equals scripting enabled. Hi, my name's Denise, and that's me there with the crutches. So I guess you're wondering how I ended up needing crutches in the first place. Was it A, due to a skiing injury? Was it B, due to falling off a table while I was dancing on it? Was it C, because I've got relapsing rheumatic multiple sclerosis? Or D, is it all of the above? The answer is C. I have relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis, or MS as it's also known. MS is a neurological condition that's unpredictable, variable, and different in every case. So what sort of barriers does this cause? As well as the more visible mobility problems that I experience, one of my main symptoms is extreme fatigue. This can affect me in many different ways. This can affect me in many different ways. It could cause extreme tiredness, make it hard to concentrate, and can exacerbate some of the other symptoms that I'm about to describe. Sometimes my eyes go a bit funny. And I'm only one of many who has a visual impairment. Just like to point out, this picture is actually in honour of the fact it's taught like a pirate day. I wasn't feeling brave enough to do my whole presentation in pirate speak. So I'll just do my token thing by saying "arr." We go on to the next slide. This can also include blurred vision, double vision, and colour distortion. This is where colours can appear to be altered. For example, reds can appear to be pink. But it's not always my eyesight that's affected. Sometimes I feel like I'm wearing Mickey Mouse gloves. And at other times, I can experience numbness or altered sensation in my hands. Just like Mr. Jelly here, sometimes I'm a bit shaky, and this can make coordination and fine controlled movements extremely difficult. As well as being extremely frustrating and annoying, this means that typing, selecting from drop-down menus, and clicking on icons can be a bit of a nightmare. And sometimes my hearing isn't as good as it should be, and appears a bit muffled. And sometimes I suffer from vertigo. A common misconception is that vertigo is a fear of heights. This isn't actually true. Vertigo is a balance disorder that can cause dizziness and make you feel like you're spinning or swaying even when you're standing still. I have to say, it's not a particularly pleasant experience, and I definitely wouldn't recommend it. So that all of these things can make life pretty unpredictable, but one thing is for certain. Every day will be different to the next, and my needs will change from day to day. But everyone has different needs and abilities, so how do you meet everyone's requirements at the same time? Well, this isn't strictly possible, but one approach is universal design. Universal design makes room for all users by taking as many needs as possible into consideration in the design process. However, sadly, this doesn't mean designing products that are fully usable by everybody. Sadly, there isn't a single product that can truly fulfil all needs of all users at once. Here's an example of how OXO uses universal design to make people's lives easier. This here is a peeler from the Otse Good Grips range. Its design is ergonomic. It's got a wide handle with a non-slip pressure-absorbing grip. This sort of an inclusive design means that their products are accessible to a much wider audience. So why not apply this approach to online systems? Well, the good news is that's exactly why you're here today. So by now, I should think you're wondering, what is enabled by design, and why am I so interested in scripting enabled? Enabled by design is developing an online community that will support anyone looking to make adjustments to their lives. This can be through as a result of disability, injury, or personal identified need. We want to practice what we preach, and it's extremely important our website will reflect this. And that's why we're so excited about Scripting Enabled. Just like to say thank you for listening and ask if anyone's got any questions. There's my contact details if anyone needs them.
Okay, we managed to finish the first presentation 5 minutes before it was supposed to start, so that's off to a good start. But that's basically what I wanted to do. I don't want anybody to hear showboating, going up on stage like, hey, look at what I've done. It's more important that you can ask questions and actually what's on your mind. So to fire that off a bit, we will have this young gentleman over there run around with a microphone to if you have any questions. But if we just quickly, can you quickly give us a run through of what Enabled by Design, the site and the community will be like or is like at the moment?
Let me think. Basically, the idea of Enabled by Design is to make assistive equipment more accessible to people, but also to make it more aesthetically pleasing and to actually meet individuals' needs. So really, we want our website to reflect our kind of ethos. I suppose one of the main things is that we want the whole experience to be enjoyable and fun, because quite often I find that the whole disability experience can be quite a serious one and kind of lacks the fun and enthusiasm that other design sites might have. We're in the process of building up our community, and we're hoping to run focus groups to get people involved, users of assistive equipment and designers, as well as healthcare professionals, get them working together and try and figure out how these relationships will work, how they will work together, and then hopefully that will provide scope for us to build our website. We want our website to be as accessible as possible. So basically that's why I really wanted to come today, to find out about web accessibility and, hopefully take some things home to transfer onto our website. So.
In your pitch, you showed online video as an example to actually show people with different disabilities each other videos with what systems they've done. One of the things that they show, I wasn't one of the judges at that competition, one thing that I really, really loved was that there was a problem. I've got problems cutting a carrot. I would love to cook, but I really have problems with knives because my hands are really shaky and I can't really do that. So somebody else found this really cool product that basically is not really amazing. My mum had one of those 4 years ago. It's basically a carrot and you just put some knives on top of it and you chop your carrot that way. So you've got this big button to press rather than just wielding the knife. But other people have totally forgotten about that product. So somebody could have described it in the answers of the comment of the question, but they just uploaded a video of them using it in the kitchen and showing like, hey, here's the URL where you can order it, and this is how I use it to cut my carrots, and I got the same problem as you have. And it's such a wonderful, inspiring story that something like as inaccessible as online video actually can help people just explain something quickly that 5 pages of text wouldn't have done. So that's an interesting approach, and I would love for more designers to talk to Enabled by Design as well, especially product designers, because what you said was also like, just because I need some living aids, my flat shouldn't look like a cheap hospital. Because we got the same with assistive technology, with assistive software. Some of it is so unwieldy to install. I mean, like, for testing purposes, I tried to install JAWS 4 and ask me for a floppy disk. I'm like, yeah, MacBook Pro in parallels, floppy disk is not really an option. So are there any questions for Denise?
Thank you very much, Denise. I think you did very well for the first time speaker, for starters. I was wondering what problems that your community have enlightened you with about your present website. What's the feedback been like?
Well, I have to admit, we're only in our very first kind of stages. We've only just recently relaunched our website, which would be on Monday. So it is quite early on, but we're very, very interested in getting people to use our website, test it out, see what sort of problems they come into contact with, and to let us know, because we're really keen about listening to our community, finding out what difficulties they're having, and trying to find ways around this. As I say, at the moment, the interim site as well is kind of in its starting stages. We just wanted a space for people to share ideas, talk through their experiences, and start building that relationship. So it's kind of a work in progress, as it were.
Could you quickly talk about the camp that the Enabled by Design was built and what that was like?
Okay. Well, we kind of came through the social innovation camp route. We took part in the first ever social innovation camp. They had a call for ideas, which was basically how can you use web technology and the social web to meet social needs. And I'd had my idea for Enabled by Design, but it didn't have that name at the time. I suppose in 2005, as a result of my own experiences, I was diagnosed with relapsing or remitting multiple sclerosis and underwent a series of disabling relapses. And after this happened, I went into hospital, eventually went home, but was assessed by an occupational therapist to try and look at different ways of keeping my independence as I was having mobility problems, difficulty manipulating objects with my hands, and my eyesight wasn't particularly good either. So it was great looking at assistive equipment, finding ways of being independent and trying to do as many things as possible for myself, because I already felt like I'd given up quite a lot. I'd had to give up my career, so I really didn't want to give up on anything else. I just wanted to keep my independence as much as possible. So all of this equipment was fantastic. Couldn't fault it at all in terms of it did what it said on the tin, but at the same time I was quite frustrated by the fact that my home ended up looking like a hospital, and all of the equipment I was given was quite dated, clinical, and as I say, it's not a good look for your home, a sort of Victorian hospital. So I was quite keen on making a change and trying to kind of disrupt things a bit, I suppose. But then I had this idea, but then I didn't really know what to do with it. So eventually, my friend Dominic Campbell, he's in the audience. He met Anna Maybank from Social Innovation Camp, and they had a chat about what she was trying to achieve. And so he came back and told me about it and said, right, this might be a good time for you to actually put your idea out there and see what people think. So, I suppose the rest of that's history, really. I put my application in, and I think from about 80 to 90 submissions, I think they picked about 6 to attend the weekend. And then it was a fantastic weekend. There was a lot of energy. It was kind of people at the sharp edge of social need, hackers, designers, all coming together to work on the 6 different projects. I suppose when I first started at Social Innovation Camp, I didn't really know what to expect. I was a bit worried in case I didn't end up with an actual team. I wasn't really sure who was going to be interested in my idea or where it was going to go. But basically, we worked on the idea for the Saturday and the Sunday. And then on the Sunday afternoon, there was a show and tell session where everyone had to pitch their idea, their proof of concept, and talk about where they wanted to go with their idea in the future. So I wasn't feeling quite brave enough to stand up in front of everybody. So Dominic, who I've just introduced you to, he was the voice of Enabled by Design. So, yeah, and we were awarded first prize, but the other projects were fantastic, and the energy from that weekend was great. So I would just like to say that in December they're running the second social innovation camp. And so if anyone's got any ideas that they want to share, or if they just want to get involved in the weekend, I'm sure they'll need hackers. So yeah, get involved with it. I definitely recommend it. So yeah, the event Social Innovation Camp, and yeah, I'm sure Christian will be able to tell you a bit about it as well.
No. I think she covered it quite nicely. It was great to see that was also quite an inspiration for this thing and for tomorrow as well. It's great to see that people just went there and said, like, hey, we want social change, we have a problem. It was like visiting people in prisons, for example, is a real pain, a really convoluted process. So they wanted to make like a website where people can rate their prison visits. Not like their involuntary ones, but the ones where they actually visit people in prison. And a bit like rate my hospital, patient rating, these kind of things. And it was interesting to see the energy that all of a sudden you saw Denise sitting down there with like 12 guys around her, all hacking along and setting up Drupal and setting up a little system and discussing if they will go for video upload from the beginning in the pitch or if they already go. So I saw the energy flowing there. I saw the geeks like, yeah, Drupal, I've got these 5,000 plugins that we can all put in and it's great. And she's like, actually, that's what I wanted to show and this is where I want to go with this. And this is the kind of left-right thing that I want here to happen. I want basically geeks being stopped from overdeveloping things that nobody needs and other people basically listening to geeks. Another thing was, yeah, Together or Aid Festival. One of the things, one of the winners there was talking about fighting knife crime in teenagers with some IT system, which is, yeah, a daring attempt, it's good. And then they're like, oh, well, we need a design agency, so if anybody's in the audience here that can build us a website, that'd be great. We got funding now, so we want a website to talk about knife crime in children. And I'm like, how about you make a Facebook group? How about you make where the kids hang out and actually talk to them there? And when you have a mass of people to talk to, when you have a community, you can think about building up a website. We always go for the fast, quick technology solution, but we don't really understand the problems of people. So, in terms of technology, like for the geeks in the audience, so let's quickly have a show of hands. Who's going to be here tomorrow for hacking? Okay. Who considers themselves more a designer? Good. Who is hardcore hacker? Yahoo people don't count. I interviewed you, I know. Anybody who is in a project manager role or a managerial role and came here to learn about these kind of things? Good, we got two or three. We need another event for that, I think. Because if we come up with great ideas and then companies don't give us the money and time to do it, that's a bit of a problem. So in terms of for the hackers in the audience, when you surf web at the moment, you bought yourself a new computer. Well, that's mine, but the other one isn't there. And what was the first things that you found helps you a lot when you surf around? What were the biggest problems with several websites? Are there, you can name and shame them if you want to, because we try to build systems around them. What were the biggest interface elements or frustrating moments for you?
sorry. Sorry.
Not the BBC.
Well, I have to admit, for one thing, I suppose my computer in the first place was a bit of a barrier. Having a desktop or a clunky laptop isn't exactly ideal, so it's a good excuse, I suppose, but a MacBook Air kind of meets my needs in terms of it being warm. I know it's a good excuse, isn't it?
Or other sub-notebooks from other vendors.
Yes, of course, sorry, I'm not used to all this stuff. But basically, a lightweight computer that meant I could actually take it with me, actually do things with it, rather than it just being attached to my desk all the time. In terms of websites, I'm not going to name or shame any. I just think it's kind of general things, like maybe having screens that are very busy, a lot of things that are going on. It's very distracting, especially when you've got a visual impairment or your eyesight isn't quite as good. You find it hard to focus on things. So I suppose if you've got a really busy screen, there's lots of things flashing, lots of things going on, things popping up. It makes it impossible to try and figure out what exactly you're trying to do and navigate around the page. Another thing can be that icons to click on can be very, very small, which is all very well if you're very dexterous, but I suppose at the moment I'm not the most dexterous person in the world. I can't really, my hands are quite numb, and my actual sort of fine movement's very shaky, so it does make it very difficult to navigate around the page, and you can end up clicking on the wrong button and being taken away from what you want to see, which is really frustrating. Sometimes with I suppose icons on a toolbar, I suppose sometimes you can accidentally, if they're too close together, you can accidentally click on another, so you end up opening another application, which is also frustrating because you end up having to wait for the thing to load and then close it down and then go back to what you were trying to do. And I hope that kind of answers some of the things you're looking for.
There's a question there.
Yeah, sorry.
Wait, can you wait for the mic so everybody hears?
Oh, sure.
It's well worth waiting for.
My favourite irony there is when you have these font resizing tools that are 10 by 10 pixel buttons.
Very true.
Thank you. Sorry, now I have a lot of pressure to make it useful. I was just wondering, in terms of sort of methodology or just, I guess, philosophy, I might be getting a bit too specific too early here, but do you like it if people try to fix as many problems in a design as possible just in a single design, or do you like a site that can be adapted to your specific problems? Sorry.
Well, as I was saying in my presentation, I quite like the idea of universal design, so that's kind of meeting as many people's needs and taking into consideration as many people's needs during the design process. So I suppose it's quite useful if a website is as accessible as possible, and I suppose if people are still having problems, then maybe they need to look at other ways of trying to adapt their experience. But really, it would be lovely if you could have websites that sort of set out from the beginning to meet as many people's needs as possible.
It's also a bit of a problem, isn't it? Because you run into the same usability issues then with the systems that you provide. It's always the way out. Like, yeah, we have a preferences panel that you can change your whole website around. But finding the preferences panel and then navigating that one is the other issue. Like, my geek answer to your problem would have been like, yeah, but okay, the icons are too small, but they're keyboard accessible. So are you using a lot of keyboard navigation?
I have to admit, no, I'm not, because I'm still learning. But I definitely need to learn those sort of things. But also, typing can be quite difficult for me. So keyboard shortcuts can be, it's all very well if you've got good control of your fingers, but if you're shaking or you've got tremors, you can end up pressing keys multiple times and shortcuts don't necessarily work as well, so it's kind of a bit of both really.
That's a bit of a problem, because I mean, most operating systems have sticky key settings, for example, or have like a universal access, it's called, on a Mac by now. There's great, great tools in there, but I mean, if we don't tell people where they are, or if we don't explain people where they are, and I blame hardware vendors as much as I blame PC World and other computer shops. Like, when you sell a computer, people show you the graphics acceleration, what games you can play on it, but people don't show you, like, hey, and if your mom wants to use it, the one with the thick glasses, she can actually turn it on and you can zoom it here. So we have to get that a bit more out into the main market and get it more interesting for people as well. There's a question here.
Yeah, I'm talking about you not really using the keyboard, although it's hard to navigate by mouse. Are there maybe third-party or third tools, whatever, to use to actually make it easier to use either of them? Or is it actually just enlarging the whole thing to make it easier to turn on?
I suppose that's the thing. I don't actually know about everything that's available, so I probably need to be educated a lot more as well about what's out there, what they can use. I'm just kind of a lay person trying to make use of my computer in the best way I know possible, I suppose. So that's another reason why I'm here today, is to find out more about what's out there and what can be used. It's like I was talking to Chris about the computer that I ended up buying, and it's got a really useful tool where it can actually read text to you. But I wouldn't have known about that until I spoke to Chris. So yeah, it's kind of about education as well, and kind of telling people what's out there, what's available. So I'm sure there are all sorts of things out there, but people just don't know about them. They're quite hidden away, as Chris said. So.
Thank you. Another thing you said, you want to just plug and shame websites that is there maybe a very good example you can use very well.
Scriptingenabled.org.
Of course, scriptingenabled.org. I'm just trying to think. I suppose Facebook's quite good in terms of. It's quite well set out, and I know where to find things. It's not too busy. Well, it depends how you set up your profile page, I suppose. If you're adding loads and loads of add-ons, then it will get really busy, but you're in control of that a bit, so that's quite good. And I like the fact that it just makes the world kind of more open. I can keep in touch with my friends. It makes the world more accessible to me. So in that way, it kind of balances out sort of the cons, I suppose, by the fact that it's actually a good application to use.
What do you use the web for? And you don't have to answer that. If you know, like, what's your main purpose to go on the web? I mean, some people go for gaming, some people go for checking if the tube is down again. Some people go to the BBC to watch their great programs. And other people go to Yahoo.
That's not a
No. So what is your main driver to go on the web?
Well, I found when I was particularly ill, when my mobility was really, really bad, I wouldn't be able to get out of the house. So I would be sometimes bedridden, sometimes just stuck at home, and I would be completely bored, and I wouldn't want to watch sort of morning TV, and it's just not what you want to do. I know a lot of people say, oh, lucky you can sit and watch this morning, but it's not true.
Although, I
do like telling film though. but basically, the web is my lifeline to the outside world. It's like I can communicate with friends, find out what they're up to. I can use Skype, I can have a chat with people, can find out about accessibility of venues before I go to them. Say I want to go to a concert, I want to check that I'm not going to have to walk up sort of 10 flights of stairs before I get to where I want to go. It's a really useful tool to do all sorts of things. I suppose also just normal things like listening to music, anything really. So I suppose I'm probably quite average in terms of what I use the web for. And also, as now I'm starting up Enable by Design, I'm kind of using the resources that are out there in terms of setting up a business, learning about the blogging world, learning about technology, because I'm quite new to all this technology sort of stuff. So it's also tapeable, really.
Are there any big MS self-help group sites?
Well, the main one is the MS Society, and the MS Trust as well. They do a lot of research work, which I'm really kind of interested in speaking with the MS Trust, and they've shown interest in doing a small article about Enabled by Design and kind of explaining what we're trying to do. So I'm kind of hoping that by getting in touch with different charities, different organisations, that we'll kind of be able to raise awareness and get people involved as well.
Cool.
Any more questions? Or, well, yeah.
Hi.
Hello.
I was just thinking, when you you're talking about buying your computer, and Christian mentioned that when you go buy a computer, you're shown the fancy whizzy stuff, but you're not sold. Some of the tools are actually already inbuilt in the computer. I was just pondering the idea of people who could make use of some of those tools, how are they going to get to know about them? And some of it could be by pushing education down from the computer vendors, operating systems, the websites, whatever. Some of it is going to be down to the personality, the person who's actually using that computer, whether they're motivated. That's what I'm saying. I have in discussions with geeks, when there's lots of stuff built in, they say people will discover it. But to discover it, you've got to have a kind of motivation to go and explore. And working with people who have some disabilities, visual impairment, quite often they're not exploring because they've had so many bad experiences in the past, they're just too scared. So I want to kind of put the question to you, in your group of people, the people you're working with, people you're aiming at, what's the general kind of approach? Are people motivated and want to go and explore and discover? Or is there a case of bad experience in the past that could impinge them doing that?
Well, I suppose they come in kind of two camps, really. The group that you're talking about who kind of feel disengaged from everything, feel like they've already kind of tried to give it a go and it's not worked, so they've given up and aren't willing to think of things differently. Through the Enabled by Design project, we've kind of come across people who are kind of like, oh, why reinvent the wheel? Why try and change things? It's just the way it is. But I suppose if you provide education and make that more readily available, I suppose it'd be quite nice if there was kind of almost like a tutorial application that you could load up as soon as you set up your computer, so you can figure out what your computer can do in terms of accessibility. Because I'm sure there's all sorts of nice little things that you can use in terms of that will make everybody's lives easier. Like, not everybody, you might just want to you might download a book off the internet, and then if your computer can read the text to you, then that's almost like an audio book. So it kind of, there's all sorts of things that people can use their computer for, but they probably just don't realise. I suppose I'm probably in between the two groups. I'm kind of still learning, and I want to learn, so that's probably a slight difference in terms of I still want to go out there and find out what's available, but it's getting to the people that just feel like, oh, it's rubbish, nothing ever works, and that's because they've had bad experiences in the past, unfortunately. Does that answer your question?
Sorry. Just a quick one. I guess one of the problems is also, I mean, you have like Windows and OS 10, obviously from the geek faction, and it's like you learn that once and then it's different. The same thing when you go from computer to computer, progress. Every single website has its own idioms of design. It's like everything is always laid out in a different way, whereas application on one specific operating system very often have similarities between them. So I guess it's very difficult, and I think that's where designers have to think, like, rather than always think coming up with the most innovative design, also to come up with a little bit like, well, what is the standard in this? What is a recognized design pattern that really works well? So I guess that's one of the big problems as well. I don't know how you feel about that.
I think that design is really important. From what I've been learning, you've got all the kind of back-end kind of things that are going on, but then like the front-end sort of design is the first thing that people come into contact with. So I suppose if you're feeling bombarded and your senses are being bombarded by your sort of website, then you might just kind of walk away from it and say, oh, it's too much for me. I'm not even going to try and even use it, so you can't even find if it's an accessible website in the first place. So I suppose both design and the kind of techie kind of background stuff needs to kind of work together to make the experience much easier.
A quick plug in that case, on a developer network, Yahoo Developer Network, we have a design pattern library that can be reused to build designs before you actually come up with your own layouts, and all of them has been user tested in our systems, are in use on our live systems, and all of them are licensed Creative Commons. So all of them have an accessibility section as well that explains what the accessibility impacts of these, of a modal panel, of an animation of those things is. Sadly enough, they're not quite full in this respect yet. We get a lot of re-feedback like, yeah, that looks really pretty, but I do it in blue. Rather than like, that's a great concept for the main market, everybody loves this, but as a person with MS or as a person who is blind, that's a problem. So look at those, and if you find something there, please email us on the developer network and we will put them in there, because the licensed Creative Commons are meant to be augmented and meant to be added to.
So there was a question in the back there.
Hi. You talked about websites that you find particularly useful, particularly accessible. I'm just wondering about what you like, what you think in terms of attractive websites, because I suppose as a disabled person myself, I don't have any particular access needs, although I'm short-sighted, and I find myself going to a lot of websites that are beautifully designed with tiny fonts. And I will increase the fonts and often break the design. So I'm just wondering, you know, when you look around the web, do you find yourself coming across lots of websites that you think, actually, that's a really attractive, really even beautifully designed website? And does it get you thinking about, you know, apart from what you talked about as larger icons, menus, things like that, what you'd like to see in terms of attractive websites? Because I think there's always something of a feeling that you can make an incredibly accessible website, but it might, because of that, it might not actually be attractive to other users. So I just wondered what you might regard it in terms of attractive, even beautiful design on the web.
I suppose I'm a bit idealistic. I would hope that it is possible to get the two, sort of an attractive website that is accessible. Things like very, very small type in the first place, I don't really see how that kind of benefits anyone really. So if you're kind of taking all those things into consideration from the very beginning, you can maybe, well, I'm not a designer myself, so I'm probably speaking kind of maybe naively, but I would hope that if you kind of concentrate on those things in the very first place and integrate all the accessible kind of options in terms of font size from the beginning, then you can incorporate it into the design. I don't see why accessibility has to mean ugly.
It's actually quite an issue, isn't it? It's like
I'm going to Atlanta, and I complained to one of the designers at that media when he was on the panel, talked about great designs. I was like, everything you showed was wonderful, but not maintainable, and really, really hard to read for somebody who has not 20/20 vision. And I annoyed him so much that we're now going to do a talk together in Atlanta, making accessibility sexy. Well, I'm coming from the tech side, and he's coming from the design side. How can I make things for accessibility or for people with disabilities onto a design to make the whole design more inclusive, more interesting? We still have a question of how to do that, how to make it sexy, but other than low cleavage, we didn't come up with much. But it will be there, and I think it's very much important that we challenge designers as well to say, like, it's not only beauty in the, like, pushing the envelope of the technology, there's also a beauty in limiting yourself to a user need. So we're almost time for cookie and coffee, so I want to thank very much to Denise. You finished it. You're off the hook now.
Kristen, can we just have one more? Sorry, Roger's been trying to ask a question.
Sure. That's an accessibility problem. He doesn't see people in the first row.
It's for Roger, just here. Great.
Sorry to keep you from cookies and coffee.
Okay.
I wanted to make a comment first. Denise, you probably know this or you'll learn this. When you speak, you're very powerful because you're so straightforward and from the heart and honest as you perceive things. I just want you to know that. I'm sure we all feel the same. I wanted just to say something a bit specific. One thing I really liked from the discussions was this idea of the, if I've got it right, the mini video about all sorts of ways of doing things. A mini video, this is how you cut things like carrots. Mini video, this is what you might do if you want to enlarge something on the screen. But there must be merit in setting up a site, a kind of a YouTube site full of mini videos for people with disabilities. We could call it YouTube or something like that, so kick it off, yeah? And lots of people contribute to this, and it's kind of indexed and tagged so that you can find what you want. And just see a minute on this or 2 minutes on that. I think if we did that, it would be a fantastic step forward.
Doesn't even have to be a site, we can just make a YouTube group.
Yeah.
Actually, AbilityNet are doing some of that already. I don't know if anyone's here from AbilityNet today.
Yeah,
oh, absolutely. Of course they are. Kath, sorry. yeah, they've done some great stuff. But yeah, we need more of that.
Yeah, don't hold back on these ideas. Thank you very much. This is exactly what we wanted here. So, I think we're off. You're off the hook. You can have some cookie and coffee. So that's the first thing I spent money on, so I hope you appreciate them. And we'd be back here at 11 o'clock for Kath Moonen from AbilityNet talking about loads of user testing and things that she tried to poke holes into. So thank you very much for having us.